From WHQR Public Radio in Wilmington, North Carolina, this is Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. Marine biology at the University of North Carolina, Wilmington is frequently held up as one of the highly regarded programs there. Life and marine sciences were identified by a New Hanover County economic development analysis 2.5 years ago as one of the existing strengths for the Cape Fear region and one that should be exploited. About a decade before Jay Garner delivered that report to county commissioners, MarBionic had launched at the University of North Carolina, Wilmington. The organization describes itself as an R&D-based economic development program which discovers, develops, and markets new products and technologies derived from the sea. Daniel Baden is MarBionic's executive principal. Before taking the helm there, he served as the director of the Center for Marine Science at UNCW and as the William R. Keenan Jr. Distinguished Professor of Marine Sciences. He also was a professor of marine biology and fisheries at the Rosenstiel School of Marine and Atmospheric Science at the University of Miami. And he was director of the National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences, Marine and Freshwater Biomedical Sciences Center, also at the University of Miami. And he is with us today to explain what MarBionic is doing after nearly 12 years in the community, how it works, and what's new. Daniel Baden, welcome to Coastline.
Good day, Rachel. Thank you.
We're inviting you to join the conversation. If you have a question about marine science in the region or about MarBionic, give us a call on this Wednesday at 910-343-1138. You can also email us today at coastline@whqr.org. Daniel Baden, considering the history so far of MarBionic, what is the most promising or what you would consider the most successful technology or product that's come out of MarBionic, the crown jewel?
Crown jewel. There are several, but let me focus on one, which is a partnership we have here in North Carolina, in Wilmington. Most of our work is dependent upon the cultivation of marine microbes from the ocean. And in order to do that, we use either bottles or carboys or large containers. And most recently, we've been developing over the last 6 or 7 years photobioreactors. Photobioreactors are bioreactors that culture large-scale quantities of organism. They use light, and they assess temperature and control temperature, salinity, and nutrient concentration. This work is being done in collaboration with IcoWorks in town. IcoWorks is a German scientific instrumentation company that has their national headquarters in Wilmington, North Carolina.
And how did you develop this partnership with IcoWorks? When did this emerge?
The partnership began originally as an introduction through University of North Carolina Wilmington's advancement office. It was Eileen Salin. And she knew one of ICA's members, Bob Harden, and brought us together, us meaning myself, Carm Thomas, and Jeff Wright, to talk about our needs in the area of cultivation of high quantities, large quantities of purified organisms from the ocean. And ICA said, well, let us try and see if we can develop an instrument that will service all of your needs. And so they've been doing prototyping for the past 6 or 7 years. CARM brings them into the laboratory, puts a variety of different types of organisms into the bioreactors, cultures them, assesses them, feeds back to ICA on what works and what doesn't work. And we're now at a stage where just, I think it was last week, CARM, in collaboration with ICA, signed off on the final version of the instrument, and it will be offered for sale now by ICA around the world.
And who do you expect to be the buyers of a bioreactor like this?
Bioreactors like this are of value to the pharmaceutical industry. They're of value to algae companies that are looking for algae for foods or algae for vitamins or for specific products, biological products from the algae. They're useful for groups that are doing exploration of new molecules from organisms. You have to have a substantial amount to be able to find the minute quantities of these specific chemicals and then purify them and learn about their activities. So it's really a discovery followed by development process, and those are the kinds of people around the world that would use them.
And you said that there were several products or technologies that you're particularly proud of that have come out of MarBionic. What are some of the other ones?
One that tends to get mentioned quite often in Wilmington is the cystic fibrosis drug Brevenel that we've been developing in collaboration now with our licensed partner, Silurian Pharmaceuticals, in California. That particular molecule was isolated from Florida red tide organism, purified and studied over about 14 years within an NIH federal grant that the university had in collaboration with a number of partners around the country. This particular molecule was described as part of the milieu of biological materials that this organism produces. And then after discovery of the molecule, it was discovered that, wow, this has a potential in the treatment of cystic fibrosis or other mucociliary diseases, mucus-producing diseases that mess up the way your cilia move. So that program has been moving forward. The corporation is talking about developing, where our preclinical is nearly finished. We're looking at FDA, orphan drug receptor, orphan drug identification types of characterization for our molecule. That means that the intellectual property is secure. The university, in their wisdom, along with AAI Pharma, back early 2000s, patented the organism and a number of its uses, the chemical and a number of its uses, and the university holds all of that intellectual property that's available for licensing to industry, and it's been licensed to industry.
So does that mean, if the university holds the intellectual property, that all the profits that come from the sale of Brevenel will benefit the university?
Well, wouldn't that be wonderful? But no, it's a partnership, and in fact, the contract between the university and the corporation, the university has a portion of ownership of the corporation, and the university also has the rights to pursue any grant-related research and development with the molecule. Also allows us to continue to publish in collaboration with the industry, understanding what we're publishing. And so it's really kind of as a win-win for all parties.
So let's back up a little bit then when it comes to the concept of MarBionic and why it launched in the first place. Why can't you just study red tide in a lab at UNCW, extract, am I using the right terminology here?
You are.
Okay. What eventually becomes Brevenel, and then sell it to a commercial entity and let that commercial entity carry forward the expensive process of getting it through approvals and testing and all that sort of thing?
Well, if you mean selling the molecule, growing the organism, producing the molecule and selling the molecule to industry, yeah, that's another model. But in fact, universities are all about the technology readiness levels 1 through 3, which are basic science through to applied science and demonstration of an activity, biological activity. And once that's done, you can work in corporate America with grants from corporations to do this, and it is another mechanism for universities to obtain grant support. But then finally, you get to a point where it's not the university's business to be out developing drugs within the industrial community. That's best left to the professionals. And so that's the point at which we begin to look for licensing opportunities. By licensing, I mean license the technology to the corporation. They learn everything that we know about the molecule. We, in return, get some portion of their asset and move forward that way. That makes us free to go back to the laboratory and do another discovery, develop another TRL 1 through 3 that hands off to industry that then moves forward into a product or process.
Why do you need a separate entity like MarBionic to do that?
MarBionic is a program that's funded by the state of North Carolina through UNCW's annual allocation from the state. It's in the same realm as a block grant, and it's a block grant for specific purposes that are provided by General Assembly. And we marketed to the General Assembly back in 2004 on a research and development-based economic development plan, that if the university was successful, and discovery happens at universities, not in industries. If the university is successful, the cluster will develop around that university entity, and that's the MarBionic program.
How did you discover, for instance, because what was the discovery of the development of Brevenel from Red Tide, was that a beginning of sorts for you? I mean, was that a marker in terms of your recognition about how a living organism that we think of as, I don't know if you would call it a pest or an environmental issue, can actually become something that helps heal people?
It is an example, a very good example, of an organism that produces things that are deleterious to humans and things that might be helpful. So the organism that produces the CF drug also produces brevetoxins, toxins that become aerosolized and people cough and sneeze on the coast of Florida when they inhale them. And we had convinced NIH that this was an environmental health problem for humans. And so the studies that were going on, the Brevinel discovery was serendipitous along with all the other work that we were doing with this organism. In other words, we hadn't anticipated finding something that was therapeutic within this milieu of compounds.
And so how did that change then your – did that change your career track or the way you thought about scientific research? Or is that just what happens in it? When you're on one scientific track, you know that there are other possibilities that could emerge that you couldn't have planned.
Yeah, we talk about opportunity meeting preparedness. If we're doing any field of research and we have people that are prepared in the field to be able to understand the results and interpret the results, then we're able to capitalize on the opportunity.
You're listening to Coastline. It's a conversation with Daniel Baden, executive principal of MarBionic, an R&D-based economic development program at the University of North Carolina, Wilmington. We're taking your questions on this Wednesday. The phone lines are now open. You can give us a call at 910-343-1138 or email us today at coastline@whqr.org. We'll be back in 90 seconds. You're listening to Coastline. Listening to Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis Hilburn. We're talking today with Daniel Baden, executive principal at MarBionic, a research and development-based economic development program that lives at the University of North Carolina, Wilmington. The program is charged with discovering, developing, and then marketing products and technologies derived from the sea. And Daniel Baden is answering your questions about the program, its future, and emerging products and technologies on this Wednesday. You can reach us by phone at 910-343-1138 or email us at coastline@whqr.org. Daniel Baden, you have a device that measures the health of coral reefs. Tell us about that.
This is an interesting device. It's called KISSME, C-I-S-M-E. Marine scientists love acronyms.
Of course. Okay.
And so the idea of KISSME is to gently touch corals, gather the data, and not harm the corals. The instrument derives from discussions within MarBionic about different R&D activities, and one of our scientists at the Center for Marine Science, that was not presently part of the MarBionic program, was saying, look, I have an idea. I can do that. I can develop something that would be of use. And it was this KISSME device. So the idea was to be able to take sensors for pH, for oxygen, for carbon dioxide, and other things of metabolic importance, put them in a cup that has a soft top on it, and gently put them over the top of a coral, collect data under that cup, run the data through a computer, underwater as well, and then design the entire thing to be able to say, in real broad terms, healthy, 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 unhealthy, 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 create a topographic map of the health of coral reefs in response to pollution, potential climate change, current movements, pathogens, all sorts of things. So that device has gone again through multiple iterations over the last 9 years through another big program we have called SEERT, the Cooperative Institute for Ocean Exploration, Research, and Technology, funded by NOAA. That NOAA program said, this is a great device for us to transition into our universe, or into our NOAA investigators around the world for coral reef health. So that's happened now over the last 9 years. That device is now being marketed as well.
So NOAA is using the device.
NOAA's idea of the grant support is to develop instruments that they can use. But the instruments they use also are important for investigators to use. If the same instruments used by different people around the world, you can actually correlate the data from one region to another.
So who eventually will be the investigator? Who will be the end users of this?
End users will be regulatory agencies, federal employees, state employees, and coastal regions. Investigators at universities who would incorporate the KISSME device into their research grant proposals. And now they have a method to actually analytically measure changes in coral reef, not just it's a white coral reef, oh, that's a bleached reef, oh, that reef is dead. You can actually measure the metabolic processes within those reef coral organisms.
Once there's a worldwide topographical map, is that ever going to happen? And you can look at the map and say, this is where they're healthy, this is not so much. What can scientists or researchers do with that data?
The data can be used in terms of looking at other oceanographic data. Let's talk the physical oceanographers who look at either from space, from satellite, or from shipboard, changes in oceanographic conditions. In many of these studies, we're looking at oceanographic conditions. We're looking at ocean measurements. This is measuring the health of living things that are in the ocean milieu. And that was the new approach. That was the innovative approach to this device.
Would that data shape policy, domestic and international policy around issues of climate change?
It certainly could, and especially once you've collected temporal data so that you know over time what's happening, then any remediation types of work that you do in a specific area, you can actually measure whether it's getting better or continuing to decline. So it actually becomes a quantitative tool for those data sets that you're talking about, and also for investigators trying to manipulate individual coral reef settings to be able to restore the health of those reefs.
How can you perform remediation? How can you make reefs healthier?
You know, you're way beyond my level of expertise in that.
I know we're going off a little bit, but it is fascinating. You're listening to Coastline. We're talking today about the potential for economic development in southeastern North Carolina through marine biotechnology. Our guest today is Daniel Baden. He is the executive principal of MarBionic, a research and development-based economic development or growth program at the University of North Carolina, Wilmington. MarBionic discovers, develops, and markets products and technologies that come from the sea. And we're taking your questions on this Wednesday. You can give us a call at 910-343-1138. You can also email us at coastline@whqr.org. And before we get into questions of funding, there's another technology that you have mentioned about developing antibiotics from blue-green algae and fungi.
Yeah. So We're now talking about the basic research aspects of our work, and especially in the case of blue-green algae, also called cyanobacteria. One of our researchers, Jeff Wright, and his team have been looking at a variety of things called microcystins. And microcystins, if you think of a protein as a long linear linkage of amino acids like poppet beads. This is actually the bracelet or the necklace that's formed by the poppet beads when you connect them all together. And microcystins have specific types of characteristics in hepatic tissues, mostly not so good things. They punch holes in livers and do things of that sort. But these kinds of molecules, along with other molecules that are of either biomedical importance or human health importance, are in the oceans all around us. And so the purpose of the antibodies is to be able to detect these molecules in living systems, whether they be food sources, water column, sediments, potable water that comes from desalination. And so the idea is to be able to develop tests that are antibody-based against all of these materials. And they're basically used, again, around the world. We're not the only one that does that. Others do it. our advantage is that we can cultivate large quantities of all of these organisms and produce the standards. You need analytical standards to be able to do the work. To be able to do the testing, you need standards. Okay, what's a positive, what's a negative? And we offer all of those through Marbionic Development Group, LLC, which is also associated with the university and the university foundation. And it's a mechanism for us to get our standards and our materials out to other researchers to now we're talking about exponential rise in the amount of data that comes back on their uses or their activities.
Why is it more difficult to develop a product with living cells than, say, a synthetic product or something from a chemical base?
That's a really good question. And the FDA asks this question all the time. Small molecule versus biologic. Small molecules are generally manufactured in the laboratory by scientists, starting with precursors, small molecules, and building large molecules. Biologics are traditionally produced by living cell culture. Again, going back to the bioreactor, still there. The living cell culture, so what you have is in the organism that produces these materials, all these organisms, what's called a single pot method, single pot, P-O-T. The organism makes the whole molecule and spits it out, or keeps it in and you isolate the molecule. In a laboratory with chemists, if it takes 9 steps to make that molecule, you may have 3 3-pot steps to make it, or you may have 9 one-step steps to make the final product. So the goal of the biologics is this large-scale culture that allows you to downstream produce drug at the other end, or the material that you need, whether it be a standard or a drug.
You're listening to Coastline. We're talking with Dan Baden. He's the executive principal of Marbionic, a research and development-based economic growth program at the University of North Carolina, Wilmington. Marbionic discovers, develops, and markets products and technologies that originate in the sea. And Dan Baden is answering your questions on this Wednesday. You can give us a call at 910-343-1138. You can also email us at coastline@whqr.org. Dan Baden, Marbionic was recently part of a very large grant that came from the NIH. Is that right? $250 million grant?
So the grant is a major consortial grant that comes from the National Institute of Standards and Technology, which is part of the Federal Department of Commerce. So it's not related to NIH at all.
Okay.
But the idea is that as our present administration has said and past administrations have said federally, we don't make anything in the United States anymore. All of our manufacturing is moving offshore or overseas. Manufacturing USA, of which this NIMBLE program is part, are to bring manufacturing back and to establish new manufacturing practices in the United States. Now, new manufacturing practices, in this particular case for NIMBLE, it's the National Institute, oh boy, I hope I get this right, for Innovation in Manufacturing Biopharmaceuticals, NIMBL, N-I-I-M-B-L. It is a consortium of approximately 110 different entities, both industry and university, and then governmental oversight agencies, FDA, NIST, and others. The idea is to be able to close that gap from the TRL 1 to 3 that we talked about, the very early university work, industries 8, 9, 10, where they're making things or using it, bring those together so that you can make a TRL 1 through TRL 9 and actually develop collaborative programs that allow you to discover, develop, translate, move to industry, produce as a material.
And so Marbionic is part of this consortium.
Marbionic is one of the 2 Tier 1 universities in North Carolina, the other being North Carolina State University's BTEC program, to be part of this program. There are probably 30 universities, 110 industries.
And out of that $250 million, how much will Marbionic see, or UNCW?
You know, that question has been asked so many times. and I will tell you that the federal government is putting $70 million into the program, of which $35 million or so is anticipated to go strictly to educational institutions for education, educating in good manufacturing practices, educating in early biotechnology, training in biology, chemistry for students analytically. of the 250, there's 70 of it. The other 120 some odd or 130 odd million is coming from industry into the program. So it's not like industry is part of taking money from the federal government. They're actually going to be putting money into the program. So even if it was the 35 million were, I don't know. I really don't have an idea. What I would tell you is that the opportunity would not be there if we weren't part of the program, because the entire 250 is going to go for members of the consortium.
And so when we're talking about questions of funding, we had someone write in and observe, the few successful partnerships between universities and pharma have been at major research universities that have medical schools, with hundreds of research faculty in departments of pharmacy and chemistry, as well as chemical engineering, animal and crop science, veterinary medicine, among others, generating potential leads for industry. UNCW is primarily an undergraduate teaching institution. Why would industry want to partner with UNCW?
UNCW and other comprehensive level one universities have pockets of excellence. They have areas where the university has invested, where the university has supported, and where the university has developed successful products. If you think about what UNCW has done since 2000 in building an entire Crest Research Park campus, in fostering the development of the departments of biology and chemistry and earth sciences and physics, and in bringing together and working on pilot projects that promote translational and collaborative research, that's why it happens. And it doesn't all have to happen at Research One institutions.
Why is Marbionic separated from the academic structure at UNCW? Why is it important to keep that separate, or is it?
Yeah, there is. Originally, the Marbionic program grew out of the Center for Marine Science program. And we were on the second floor. And during the period of, 5 or 6 years, we continue to expand and increase in research support. That program alone has brought in, including the building, over $40 million in research support to the university over the past, since its inception in 2004. But it started to impact and impinge on research and development of the academic side of the house. So at that point, you say, okay, when the industrial, quasi-industrial part starts to build greater, you need to have space that doesn't impinge on that, and vice versa. So we sought out looking for the resources. And that was also a NIST grant. This is one of the reasons NIST is interested in us for Nimble. It's because they invested $15 million in the building along with the university's $15 million. So we got a building for half price, and we're one of the first four in the country to be supported by this program.
You're listening to Coastline. We're talking with Dan Baden, Executive Principal of Marbionic at UNCW. He's taking your questions on this Wednesday. You can give us a call at 910-343-1138 or email us at coastline@whqr.org. Zachary from Wilmington, welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Hi, how's it going?
Good, thanks. Did you have a question for Dr. Baden?
Not exactly a question, more of a bit of a proposal, and I apologize for maybe veering a bit off topic, but I just kind of heard maybe the correlation between what you guys are talking about and something that I have had on my mind. Now dealing with the ocean and the vast amount of things that we can understand and get from it, we're also not taking very good care of it. There's major dead spots in the Gulf of Mexico from climate change, oil spills. It's also going all around the world. There's huge dead spots, and nobody's really talking about or doing anything about them. And I just have a small proposal of how to, possibly change or rectify that. And it's pretty easy. It's pretty simple. It's fairly cheap as well. And it's basically just like my math teacher always said, KISS. Keep it simple, stupid. And it works like an aeration system in a fish tank, how it keeps oxygenating the water so that, everything is moving. There's plenty of oxygen in there. Well, that's what these dead spots are in the ocean, is they're lacking oxygen. So if we have, a series of different buoys with solar-powered engines on them, very small, very easy to maintain, with tubes reaching down as far as the pumps will go, you could drop 50 to 100 of them, and a couple hundred square mile radius of them, drop GPS tags on them so it doesn't interfere with shipping lanes, and just let them go to work. And I think that that pumping down air, down deep, will continue to aerate that and kind of alleviate some of those dead spots.
Okay, we have just we're going to have to go to break pretty soon. So, Zachary, I think you've given us a pretty good conceptual idea of what you're talking about. So let's see what Dan Baden has to say about your pitch.
It's an interesting concept. And, you know, thanks for calling in and presenting that. I think one of the difficult – and I'm not a physical oceanographer, so that means I don't really understand how all the waters work everywhere. But the idea of starting to – they're basically called airlift systems. And airlift systems are bringing water from depths up to the surface. It's done in some places to try to create spaces that are more oxygen incorrect. But the world's oceans in general, as you get deeper and deeper, become less oxygenated. And that means, you know, different kinds of reactions, different kinds of metabolism happens in those places. And I don't know if you really want to mess that up. I understand your concept, and I think the foam fractionation actually could work for oil spills because it would actually start to coalesce the particles, and you could actually clean up oil spills with foam fractionation airlifts like that.
So there may be an alternate application for this idea
here. Of course.
Maybe doesn't want to live at Mar Bionic, but maybe give the BP R&D team a call.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for your call, Zachary. You're listening to Coastline. We're talking with Daniel Baden, who is the executive principal at Mar Bionic at UNCW. You have a really interesting approach to the way you develop ideas and how you have conversations with your scientists. And we're going to explore that when we come back from this break. You're listening to Coastline. It's an exploration with Mar Bionic's executive principal, Daniel Baden. When we come back from this 90-second break, you'll have one more segment to call in with your question or comment on this Wednesday. What have you always wanted to know about marine sciences in southeastern North Carolina or about Mar Bionic? You can reach us today by email at coastline@whqr.org or give us a call at 910-343-1138. You're listening to Coastline. Listening to Coastline, I'm your host, Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. Today, we're learning about Mar Bionic, a research and development-based program whose mission it is to discover, develop, and then market new products and technologies that come from the ocean. Mar Bionic's executive principal, Daniel Baden, is with us on this Wednesday, and he's answering your questions. You can give us a call at 910-343-1138. You can also email us today at coastline@whqr.org. And Daniel Baden, just before we went to break, I was asking about the different ways you've developed this really unique way of having a conversation and helping people, helping your group develop ideas. Lay this out for us, how that works and what the different kinds of scientists are that have to come together and have these conversations.
That's a great question. So first of all, it's important to state that in all the work that we do, there are always students and postdocs and technical staff as part of the program. And so you think about students at different levels of their education. They have different levels of expertise. They can contribute or maybe not contribute. If one had, for instance, three principal investigators, three people that were interested in the same problem, but from different disciplines, pharmacology, chemistry, and biochemistry, let's say. They sit around the table every week. We talk about our research and we say, okay, my definition of specific binding is this. Oh, well, mine's this. Oh, well, mine's this. You have to come together with a common nomenclature. And at the same time, you're also coming together with looking at things from different points of view. We used to laugh because our technicians and students would gather around the back. It was almost like a boxing match, a three-way boxing match where people are kind of throwing punches and folks are, you know, cheering on their winners. The idea was that you'd exchange questions back and forth, and when students started to understand what was going on a little more, they would start to ask questions. And the goal was to get more
from the periphery.
From the periphery, to get more and more people into the center ring to talk about the problem. Because now you're saying, okay, you have useful contribution to make, join the group. This happened for Marlboro Ionic. We've had over 400 students in our labs since 2004. Not all at one time, of course, but you know, two, three at a time, joining in these kinds of conversations, and postdoctoral fellows through the Business of Biotech program that, in addition to disciplines in science, are bringing in business expertise, expertise from the College of Health and Human Services, education. You think about how you can bring all people together and cover all facets. That's kind of what we're doing today, right? Explaining to the community what it is that we do and how we're doing it. Nobody explains all of it. Nobody understands all of it. But we're confident enough that working together, we'll cover it with somebody's expertise amongst the group. And that's kind of how we function.
And so the participants in the circle then have earned their place. They've proven that they have something to contribute. That's how they move into the circle.
Absolutely. And that's the basis for interdisciplinary collaborative science. It is the way that science in the United States is moving away from individual grant support to multi-investigator grant support. The NIMBLE program, I hesitate to think about 110 people around a table. It won't be, but you know, the idea is that you take subsections of people to make sure that everyone's represented and that you can all interact to produce something that's for the common better.
Is there ever a time that you've been having some kind of development or discovery discussion, trying to tackle a problem, and someone throws an idea out there and you think to yourself, that's just dumb? And or as a scientist, are you trained to be less judgy and to really kind of open up to the possibilities? Is that something that you have to wrestle with?
Yeah, every day. In fact, it's, you know, they're not dumb people. It maybe just is a dumb idea. My wife says this to me all the time. So that's a dumb thing to think.
And then are there times that the idea is so simple that you dismiss it out of hand and then find out later that there's something to it?
Absolutely. That the cystic fibrosis drug was discovered that way by someone doing bioassays and realizing something didn't work the way it was supposed to work, in quotation marks. So rather than say it didn't work, she said, why didn't it work? And did some additional experiments on it and said, wow, that is an antitoxin to the toxins. Send it to another person to do a series of studies. And the third in the series of studies was to pre-treat with the Brevinel to see if we could protect against the toxins. During the pre-treatment, this investigator said, hey, this promotes mucociliary clearance. This is a cystic fibrosis drug. Just that fast. Mm-hmm. So there are these little things that you go, oh, my gosh, I could have had a V8. Is that okay to say?
But you know, that's okay.
Yeah.
They're not an underwriter.
Okay.
You're listening to Coastline. We're talking with Daniel Baden. He's the executive principal at Marbionic at UNCW. You have a few minutes left to get your question in on this Wednesday. You can either call us at 910-343-1138 or email us at coastline@whqr.org. Amy from Wilmington, welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for taking my question.
Sure.
I have a 13-year-old daughter who has expressed interest in marine biology, and I know we have a local high school that has a marine biology program for a couple of years, but if that's not an option, because she's also a golfer and wants to play golf at another high school, what types of classes can a student who is thinking about taking that path to be interested in that line of work or be able to work for a company such as Dr. Baden's, you know, for marine, for the Marbionics, what sort of classes would they look at taking in high school to be ready for going on into college or internships or anything like that in that line of work?
Dan Baden.
Yeah, for 13 years old, I would suggest that she focus on the basics. Good math skills, good reading and writing comprehension and composition. Collaboration with friends on projects. Science Olympiads and things of that sort are really valuable for students at that age, well, at all ages, but for that age, to consider different hypotheses and to answer questions that are posed to them. I think also when she gets a little bit older, there are opportunities in the summer within university laboratories for specific kinds of directed research. Also the Marine Quest program through the university and programs through the community colleges all do things to help stimulate young people's interest in the sciences and keep it stimulated. We watch women fall away from the sciences often in as early as middle school. And I think that's being corrected now. I think UNCW is doing a great job. As an aside, Mar Bionics teams are about 75% women.
Really?
Yeah.
That's so interesting. Amy, thank you so much for your call. Good question. Have you changed anything in the culture or the way you talk with your scientists? Why do you think you have such a high percentage of women in a field that's still dominated by men?
We selected the best people. I mean, you select for specific criteria and characteristics. I like people who are meticulous in their work, who are thoughtful, and who make sure that they don't discard results because it's not a preconceived notion. I think our group leaders in all three of our groups, and my group and Jeff Wright's group and Carmen Tomasa's group, all have exceptional young women in those programs. And we seek to sustain that and to develop their activities because if Mar Bionic is going to be a success as an economic development program and reaching out in through Innovate NC and other kinds of programs around the state for economic development, we need to have legacy. We need to be able to continue to do what we do so well.
We have an email from John. He asks, what are some of the ways in which young professionals who have an interest in both business and the ocean environment / engineering get involved in the ocean technology industry?
Young people. Well, I don't know exactly what young people is, if that's college age or if it's post-college.
He says professionals.
Professionals. Okay. For us, we look at gathering additional academic expertise. So our marine biotech business and biotech program, for instance, takes a PhD scientist or a master scientist who has a science background, bring them into the laboratory, work them in the laboratory for their at the bench work, and then get them into the Cameron School's business of marine or Masters in Business Administration program. This has worked very well for us. We have people at Scripps Research Institute, people in the California system now at Berkeley doing this business of biotech program. And it really helps to be multidisciplinary trained.
Going back to Brevenell for a second, because it's such a good example of what you're doing. If you, for instance, Google treatments for cystic fibrosis, which is certainly a highly recommended way of finding the cutting edge stuff. That's sarcasm. There are all kinds of promising medications that you can find on the that are in development, that are being marketed. So why would your group, why would Mar Bionic continue to put resources into something like that if there are already treatments that have captured the lion's share of the market?
They've captured the lion's share of the market because it's what's available. It's a lethal disease. It's a lethal endpoint. People are looking, people who have the disease or parents of those who have the disease are looking for ways to better treat. And as treatments get better, you have a standard of care. And so new drugs that come out have to be of an equal to or better standard of care. The molecule that we're working on has a different drug mechanism of action than anything out there presently. I think I can say that without much doubt. When you talk about the variety of drugs and you do a CF foundation search and you look at the different areas, there are bins. You look at them, there are bins, some that promote mucus secretion, some that treat sodium channels, some that do this, some that do that. Those are bins, and those are bins that there are recognized medications that work. Brevenell right now doesn't fit in any bin. It's a new bin. It's a new mechanism.
I know this is hard to predict, but do you know at what point it could be available for public use?
I don't know. I can tell you that the clinical studies have not started yet. And so that means clinical phase one, clinical phase two, clinical phase three. And depending on how long that takes, probably still years.
And what's the range in terms of how long that could take?
With lethal endpoint, FDA tends to assist and try to move you more quickly, combining different parts of studies. Five to 10 years.
Yeah. So at what point then, when you're working on something, at what point do you as the executive principal say, you know, we've put a lot of resources into this. It just doesn't look like it's going anywhere. We need to pull the plug. How do you get there?
Actually, Marbionic has, or the university has licensed out Brevenel to a company, so that's not our call anymore. It's their call to put money into it and to develop further. We still have the rights to do certain parts of this, and the academic portion, mechanism of action, how it actually works on a molecular level, that's a big deal for universities. Universities make their name on discoveries of mechanisms of action, and we are well into that, mm-hmm. and I'm not at liberty to talk about that.
Okay. You're listening to Coastline. We're talking with Daniel Baden, who is the executive principal of Marbionic, a research and development-based economic growth program at the University of North Carolina, Wilmington. Marbionic discovers, develops, and markets products and technologies that originate from the sea. In the Garner report, this is that economic development analysis and subsequent recommendation that was published about 2.5 years ago. They say, additionally, an estimated $290 billion of pharmaceutical sales worldwide is at risk from patent expirations over the next 5 years, which in turn should drive firms to seek new ways to generate revenue. Many firms will likely change product focus toward research and development of new specialty and biologic pharmaceuticals. Are you seeing that? Now we're halfway into this prediction. Are you seeing that borne out?
Well, when a patent expires on a drug, the generics come into play. And any place that there is a generic, you can develop generics. That's a new industry picking up. Okay, it's a new industry developing. If you're talking about a large pharma company that needs to keep a portfolio of patents, they're constantly looking for new drugs that fit their portfolio. If someone's in pulmonary science, they're going to be looking at that. If they're in neurologic sciences, they look for that. Some will take a step out to look in a different field, and then they talk to groups and negotiate with groups that are at lower TRL levels, right, that are de-risked enough, they're far enough along that industry says that's a good bet for us to be able to turn a new drug out. That can happen at the university level, very uncommon. Happens more at the first company that takes a technology or the second company that takes a technology. And it really usually takes usually is a strong word. It many times takes as many as three different companies over the period of a drug development to finally bring a drug to market.
And just briefly, you've talked about being part of this very large consortium and the recipient of this $250 million
yes.
grant. Are there other entities locally that aren't part of the consortium but are partners with Marbionic?
Yeah, great question, too. Marbionic builds its own network, and this program is all about networks of networks. So think of the Marine Biotechnologies Center of Innovation. That's located, it's funded by NC Biotech through Randall Johnson's office in the Southeast region and, of course, in Raleigh. And that program is located on our campus. Deb Mosca is the leader of that. Center of Innovation and Entrepreneurship, Diane Durance, is on our committee for Innovate NC. The entire Innovate NC program that's funded through the Institute for Emerging Issues at NC State is helping us to move forward on a strategic plan for regional development in marine and life sciences.
And finally, I think it was 2 years ago, you and your wife, Alina Jamond, who's also a very well-respected marine biologist, wound up at Thalian Hall during a Paula Poundstone performance.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
Alina became a large part of Paula Poundstone's act. Are you going February 10th?
I believe we probably will. Maybe there'll be a reunion. Actually, Kiss Me is Alina's device as well.
That's Alina Jamond's device. That's
yeah,
great.
Yeah.
And maybe this will be Alina Part 2 with Paula Poundstone.
Kiss Me with Paula Poundstone. There you go.
By the way, that's coming to the Wilson Center at Cape Fear Community College on February 10th. That's this edition of Coastline. Dan Baden, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Rachel.
Coastline's executive producer is Cleve Callison. Producer is Isabel Shepherd. Technical director is Ken Campbell. If you missed part of this episode, look for it at whqr.org or get the podcast from the iTunes store. Tune in for the rebroadcast of this episode Sunday afternoon at 3. And join us for the next Coastline when we begin a special series on alternate strategies for dealing with opioid addiction in our area. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline.